Today I talk with the Beloga founders Jerica Kua and Wilson Lehr, who built like a knowledge hub aimed to help you effectively capture, connect and develop collective insights. It's a cool tool. I liked it. I saw it on Product Hunt, so I invited both of them. We talk about how they got the idea, how the building process was, how Canada and Singapore is compared to the US and Europe for building a startup. And I would say, let's jump right in. So welcome back to a new episode of the Digital Economics Podcast. Today I speak with Jerica Kua and Wilson Lehr, who founded Beloga, and I found you on Product Hunt, where you did like a really successful product hunt launch. But do you maybe first want to start with telling me what Beloga is? Who founded it of both of you? Did you found it together? So who should I ask this question?
I think I can take it. So I'm Jerica. I'm the CEO and business co-founder of Beloga. So let's start with a bit of a background story. So Wilson and I have known each other for over 5 years, been tinkling on like some side projects before deciding to build Beloga together. So that was to actually kind of test the teamwork because, you know, co-founder breakups are one of the biggest thing that can hurt a startup. So that was a way for us to know whether we are, you know, co-founder compatible to begin with. And then and we realized that we were. So we decided to build Beloga. So Beloga has gone a long way. It started off as a blogging platform, and then it went through like many different hoops that we could potentially touch base on later if that's interesting. And right now, the Beloga today that you see on the website is actually a knowledge amplifier. So basically what it is an intelligent knowledge hub that transforms how power users and team capture, connect, and evolve a collective wisdom.
Who's the target audience? So is it more for companies or more for like private people or something in between or for everyone who wants?
That's a good question. So right now, I think we are planning to target first with the power users. So we do have people like students who are like power users of like AI, software engineers, and our researchers. And after which we're planning to move towards, you know, having teams on board as well, because we do have like team features that are ready on the platform where, you know, individuals can invite one, two, or how many friends they like to join and work together on that same workspace. And obviously, the end goes to target enterprises.
And how did you come up with the idea?
Wilson, do you want to go for this one?
For sure. So how we came up with this was really interesting. Jerica here, she's a big fan of productivity. She's been a productivity consultant for some time. Like, I think consulting over 80 plus, right? Please correct me if I'm wrong. 80 plus like working professionals. And throughout all of this, I think she's realized that there are a lot of like subtle, you know, nuances and difficulties when it comes to knowledge management. So she's really passionate about that. And then for myself, ever since college, I've been really passionate about finding things, you know, just it might sound a little bit more abstract on that end, but basically I love helping people find things. And you know, that's also kind of why like I dived very deep into information retrieval, natural language processing, all that sort of stuff. I joined a search company known as Constructor, which is a search as a service backend SaaS company based in San Francisco for serving e-commerce, a lot of e-commerce big names out there. So we essentially power the backend of their search solutions over there. So from there, learned a great deal of things about search as well, about information retrieval, and carrying all of that into Beloga. So that's kind of why, like, you know, we brought the search part together with knowledge management, and that's kind of how we created Beloga.
So you have a developer background, like you're a software engineer, or you've been a software engineer and probably still are a software engineer, and you're more like the CTO, and Jerica, you're more like the CEO. Is it like something like this?
Yeah, that's right. And we intentionally make it that way so that, you know, it can help to like keep the scope of work divided. So Wilson is definitely handling all like engineering front, and I'll be handling all like customer requests, be it through like feedback or like, you know, feature suggestions. And then we'll both come together to make decisions on the product. you know, to see what we should be building, what things are sticking, what things are not, and then, you know, how to better improve the UI, UX. That's how we can actually really move fast. And I think that's quite a unique case for us where, you know, one of us can always be selling and one of us can always be building.
Cool. And it's the two of you, or are you already like building a team and stuff? So in what kind of stage do I both catch you?
You caught us in a stage where we were quite interesting, in an interesting point in our lives. We have been building this for ourselves for the longest time, but I think recently we started to get a bit of like interns because we realized that, you know, we can only go so far with two people, firstly. So like having a team definitely helps. So we do have some people helping in the marketing front and one person helping in like a developing slash operational front. And right now we are also building our team of advisors because I think, you know, getting help and mentors that have gone and make you know, their own success happen, which is like, you know, a couple of steps ahead of you, something that they've been through, done that, can always give you the advice that you need from the get-go. And actually what's really unique about this advisor pool that we have is that we don't only have one advisor, we have a couple. And the reason why is that so is because we each of them have their own strength, and there's no point getting, you know, like a one size fit all kind of thing, because by tapping on their strengths, that's how we were able to actually move really quickly.
Mm-hmm. Where do I like get contact to the advisor? So where's the place where I ask for advice? Is it like your Discord community, or where do I find like these advisors?
Advisors for like the product itself, or?
You were talking about like there are lots of or some advisors in your team, like mm-hmm. helping people getting more productive, I guess.
Oh yeah. So in terms of our advisors, we are fortunate enough that like because of Wilson's like stellar performance in his previous company, his firstly his CEO is actually our advisor and also the ex head of product and the UI UX. So like really tapping on the network that we have to get the advisors and also another advisor that we actually met coincidentally in New York Tech Week earlier this year. So it was a very interesting occurrence because we were both heading down the elevator. So I guess that's the true meaning of elevator pitch. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to him, like casually asking, oh, where are you heading to next? So like that 30 seconds talk, you know, in the elevator became like a 30 minutes standing outside of the building kind of conversation. And then he was really passionate with our idea. And after that, we just stayed connected. I think that's the most important, you know, that follow-up after that first meeting with that person. And yeah, he offered to be our advisor for Beluga. So right now we have a plethora of experts helping us in different areas.
Yeah. I really like the idea. And before saying that, I got it wrong. I thought you were putting out advisors who are helping people with their productivity. But now I understand you got advisors helping you like how to build like a startup, which I guess is like a clever thing to do. And I really like your idea because right now I think like in a lot of companies with knowledge management is like a big problem thingy. And it's not only because like, of course, no one likes documentation and to do documentation, but it's also because you have no fucking clue where the information is stored. And I was told to not be mean to software tools anymore in the podcast, but I don't like Confluence, which is, I think, right now a business standard. Do you see yourself like a little bit as a competitor to Confluence?
I would say not really, because we're actually going from like quite an interesting angle, because I think in the whole knowledge management space, every knowledge, like how we position ourselves right now is also with regards to this theory that I have. So every knowledge starts to something from search. That's why, you know, the only way to build a knowledge is when you have something that you want to find out about, learned about. That's why you go to the internet. That's why Google search exists in the first place. So after searching, then the next important thing is, you know, finding a way to capture this information down. And that's what we do have at Beluga, a way for people, you know, to easily capture information through either like a Chrome extension or like directly into Beluga with like our shortcuts. And I think after capturing, the most important thing is that to process this information, which is why we really tap a lot onto Wilson's expertise in information retrieval, because, you know, having this like corpus of knowledge without properly processing this information is as good as, you know, useless, for the lack of better words. So always that's how we decide to build Beluga as well, as a way for capturing and processing. Obviously, we are really far out in terms of like our big vision of what we truly want the product to be, you know, like this whole knowledge hub kind of thing. But like from day one, our capture and way of information retrieval is already built out.
Wilson, technology-wise, like you had this idea in the beginning. Like, how do you get started with building something like this?
That's a really good question. So I had the idea of search, right? I think search has been something that existed for some time already. And, you know, has sort of been refined over the years. There are a lot of very interesting techniques over there. But I think what was cool that came up quite recently, and I would say, you know, really inspired me as well, to be honest here, was when Perplexity was launched. I think that was a really cool, I would say, they coined themselves as an answering engine, right? Because back then you have search engine. So answering engine, basically, you know, it's tapping onto the concept of retrieval augmented generation, where you take search, and then you marry that with generative AI. So you take the insights drawn out from search, and then you pass it through like a Gen AI layer to generate like a very nice, concise answer coming up from the users. So that thing really fascinated me a lot. It kind of reminded me a little bit about, I'm not sure if you know this, but, you know, Iron Man, you know, Jarvis from Iron Man, like, you know, you can just ask questions anywhere and there will be really nice detailed analysis of, you know, of an answer that comes back, not just the kind that you hear from like, you know, from like Alexa and all that. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're headed in that direction as well in the future. But yeah, so that really inspired me. And that's kind of why, like, you know, it got me really deeply thinking about how to make that even better, and how to marry that, like, you know, with your own knowledge base as well, instead of just the external web and whatever there is. And yeah, that's kind of how we got to where we are.
And how do you start then? So you have like technological concepts which you like, but of course probably you were relying on existing like infrastructure, because I guess you didn't have like millions and billions to train like AI models yourself. Like, what were the technologies you were using in the end?
Definitely not. So yeah, we don't you're right on point on that. Like, we don't have, you know, our own infrastructure to train like $1 million LLMs out there. So we relied on OpenAI, you know, that seemed to be the de facto, at least when we started out. You know, at that point in time, OpenAI seemed to be sort of like the only one, besides like, you know, even Anthropic was still in a closed beta at that point. So it was pretty much OpenAI at that point. And we, like, in terms of other infrastructure and all, we don't really utilize any of the open source, like, you know, frameworks out there, like, let me think, like Llama Index, for example, right? It's mostly because those weren't really that big at that point. I think they were still, you know, sort of like they were still building as well. So we built our own framework on top of that. I would say ours is still pretty optimized to handle, like, you know, our own use case in our case. And yeah, we built our own search engine as well, tapping onto a lot of the inspiration that I got from my previous company.
Cool. Yeah, that's impressive. to say it shortly, building like searches, I think, like, an interesting topic, definitely. One thing I wondered was pricing wise. I had like a few days ago the Paddle founder in the podcast, who was like, yeah, a lot of AI companies, or companies who are relying on OpenAI and etc., are like having a dynamic pricing, which is then connected to the usage. In your case, like, there's a free like version and there's $20 per month version, but with unlimited AI searches. And I was wondering, like, isn't that dangerous for you, that like people are exploiting that? Or am I the first person thinking about this, and you didn't have trouble so far, but after listening to that, someone will exploit your system now?
I think that's a really good question. So definitely, you know, with AI models popping up, you know, when it first got released, we all know that it got pretty expensive. So we did also have our own, you know, concerns with regards to, like, you know, giving unlimited AI. But we realized that these concerns, you know, outweigh the anxiety that people get bring. For example, if you have to be like, bring your own API key, like a regular Joe wouldn't know how to get access to an API key in the first place and how to properly keep that key, you know, like, secure to yourself and how to even, you know, connect, marry the two together. And also, for example, if you give people like a limit on their AI usage, for how would people like, you know, view your startup? Or like, what kind of branding you want to show? I think that was something that Beluga wasn't going for, because we wanted people to, you know, use this product comfortably, you know, be able to use it for like research. You know, we don't want someone to be doing your best work and suddenly realizing, oh no, I've limited credits left. Oh, I'm running out. I can't do this. I can't do that. That kind of, you know, anxiety, we really want to take that away from users. So that's why we were quite adamant on actually giving unlimited AI, just because we want to give the best experience from the users. And honestly, our bet or like gut feel on taking on that has really paid off, because we do have users that really thank us for this, and they really like that, you know, they do not have to feel pressured at all for using it. So that's why we do have a free plan. So actually, going back a little bit, Beluga actually started off as like a closed beta, like any other startups, and we had a only paid only version. And it was only because of like constant, you know, ask from like users that, you know, to have a free plan so that, you know, for example, their friends can try it out, their family can try it out, those kind of stuff. That's why we decided to offer the free plan. So the free plan, obviously, it will not have like unlimited AI model, or wouldn't have like the best AI models that we can offer. So right now we're just tackling with GPT-4o mini. Thank you, OpenAI, for making that cheap. But like... and then after that, the pro plan, where $20 is for the yearly plan, and then $30 monthly is where, you know, you get the whole unlimited AI. And then people seem to be loving that. So I guess that kind of works out for us at the end of the day.
But I think I didn't understand it. So I really, really understand the point, but it's really nice for the user. Like, that's so fucking annoying, imagining like you are a heavy user of a product, and then it's like, yeah, now you have to pay a little more. But still, why? So just in case someone's like, yeah, okay, I want to have access to all the different models you have here, GPT-4, you have Sonnet, you have Opus, you have Gemini. I want to have access to these models, but I don't want to pay like for 20 different users like these insane amounts of money. And I have limits, etc. with the big companies. And then like 20 people get access to one account. Did this never happen, that someone tried to exploit the system? Because I would be so afraid, like if I would be in your position, I would be so afraid of someone then like maybe even taking your access to unlimited searches for their own product so that they don't have to pay the API. But maybe there are some restrictions or something which I don't see, and I make it complicated in my head.
I think firstly, we do not have any API access yet. So that's one, like just to clarify things out. And like, I would say that we're very fortunate right now that people have not like, you know, exploit us in that way you would think that people exploit us. And also another thing is that we do have the bet on the fact that AI will get cheaper over a period of time. And it seems to be proving itself, you know, with Fall Mini being cheaper. And then I think right now, even the new latest Gemini or something, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's getting, all of them is getting cheaper. So that's that. And, you know, if it really comes to it, we might just, you know, put in a middle plan and be like, okay, now pro will be this, you know, if you are already in it, you are like existing users, we thank you, we trust you, you get to keep that. And then the full like ultimate plan could be like even $50 a month. You know, this is all hypothetical numbers where you finally get the fully flushed out with all their latest models. So definitely like I wouldn't say a struggle, but more of like an experiment. Like that's how we like to see it. Everything in a startup, I think, all starts with an experiment. So, you know, you experiment with this, you see what works, what doesn't, you take it away, what works, you keep it, or you ask yourself how we can double down further. So that's what we're doing with pricing as well.
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm really German. I'm really thinking about all the risks out there and really like, is there insurance for people overusing my AI access? Wilson, from a technology perspective, did you ever think about like building something like a brute force detection and defense just in case people are overusing their account?
Totally. So I think for the free plan, we do have safeguards around that. Like, you know, just to be clear here and transparent as well, like for the free plan, we do have a limit on usage. And I think that refreshes every week or that's going to be upcoming. And then, you know, in terms of like safeguards, like, you know, DDoS mitigation, for example, and all that sort of stuff. We're definitely like, you know, looking into these solutions. But, you know, we're sort of like only building these things out, you know, when they're absolutely needed. Because in the startup world, like, you know, there's only a finite amount of things you can focus on. Like, and of course, like we care a lot about our user experience as well. And I think the last thing we'd want is to have these like rate limits, you know, and stuff like that impact performance by the end user. So we're being super careful about that. We're definitely constantly monitoring, you know, in case any of these things do happen. We do have, you know, alerts, monitoring, and all that stuff set up. But if they do occur, we'll react really, really quickly to resolve them.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess you have like a daily like view into the stats, like how big is the usage of because that's the most expensive thing right now, I guess, or the only like money costing thing right now, the APIs. Or is there some other big costs right now as well?
I think API is definitely one of them. Don't get me wrong. But there are other things, you know, like what Wilson mentioned, you know, to set up like alerts, because we really value user experience, customer service a lot. So we do have like a alert that's really set up, and then it rings true. We use better uptime. So it kind of like bypasses your like, do not disturb mode on your phone, or like when you have no signal, it rings, it will really, really ring, and it can get quite scary at the first few times when it happens. Thankfully, it rarely, rarely happens on our end. But, you know, the time when we're testing it out, that was the first time I got to hear the ring, and that sounded worse than an alarm. I can confidently say that. Yeah, so we do have that. That's one of the costs that we do have. And also, you know, customer support, like having a way for, you know, users to contact us easily via intercom, or like, you know, using internal tools like Slack for our communication channel. So all of these different things we are also paying for as well, and alongside with using Figma, yeah, to get the designs and everything in place.
And Figma is also not cheap. I love Figma so much, so much, but it's also not cheap. What I was really impressed about was the onboarding, because I think onboarding normally sucks in like 90% of the products I used or I'm using right now, because like get Figma. Figma is like one of the most amazing tools ever built, in my personal opinion. But if you haven't watched like the default videos, which I recommend everyone to watch, then it's like really, really hard to use. And I know that most people are too lazy to watch these few tutorial videos. I think in your case, obviously, it's easier than for Figma to do onboarding. But I really like this flow being on your website. Maybe I explain it to the listeners. On your website, like, it's a simple, nice website explaining what you're doing. And on the top right corner, it says press S anytime to start. And then you press S, and then you're like guided via a nice onboarding flow where you explain step by step how to use the software. And it's not taking more than a minute or something, but then you know everything you need to know. How long did it took to build like such an onboarding flow? How often did you change it? And how did it end up that way that it is right now? And congrats, I think it's really well done.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your kind words. So I could give a quick quick whistle stop tour on our like our onboarding process. So I think for me personally, I was very Blogger's onboarding isn't the way you see it right now. Like giving a caveat out there. It's like, so we actually started off like more of a closed beta. So where we actually personally onboarded the users one by one. So last time when we had a like a waitlist kind of system, so you give your email and then you'll get hit back with like three questions from myself to really understand about what's your challenges, what's your current tools that you use, and you know how can and what's your professional's background so that we can really tailor the onboarding experience for you. So I used to do that and I hop on like every single onboarding call to and talk to them, show them how Beloga use. And then after that, because it's a paid only access at a point in time, they pay if they really want to get access to Beloga. And truth is people do pay for it. So we're always very grateful to our early adopters and customers that trusted us. And after that, what happened, we realized that, you know, like echoing what I've mentioned earlier about, you know, friends and family or like people around us just asking for a free plan. And that's where we realized we need a more easy way for onboarding. So the onboarding that you see today on Beloga was decided actually based on the happy path from our early adopters, you know, trying to find out what exactly they want to achieve from like A to B, you know, like the time to value, how can we get them the fastest in Beloga. Therefore, we decided to build such an onboarding experience. And like what you've mentioned earlier, you know, getting press S to get started. I think the reason why we also did that was because if in the Beloga platform itself, we actually have a lot of global shortcuts. So we want to start teasing that out from the get-go that like, you know, we are very shortcut friendly. And alongside the reason why we built this onboarding quite simply was also because like Wilson's neurodiverse. And we also want to target the neurodiverse people. So one of our, I think, tagline in below part of the website, we also talk about inclusivity for all. And therefore, you know, having a quick onboarding where it's not too distractive, but also gets the point quickly is what we went for. And after that, we tried and tested it with our like paying customers to see whether this was the onboarding that they wanted. And you know, we receive a good thumbs up from them, and then that's how it is. And alongside, you know, when you get onboarded onto Beloga already, the first email that you get was also a way for some users, not some, but like all users to have the opportunity to book an onboarding call. Because I still want to keep that as like a safety net if some people really are interested in. And truth is, people do book for it. And because of how personalized and tailored the onboarding is for them, they found a lot of success with Beloga.
That's interesting. So people are actually then jumping into an onboarding call because they are like, yeah, okay, I want to talk to human.
Yeah. So like,
I never would have thought that. I'm a lazy person, and I I probably wouldn't. But I mean, that's really cool. I guess for you, that's amazing because you can gather feedback as well from users, right? How many people did click that?
Actually, quite a number. I can't remember the exact number on top of my head, but I do quite a couple of onboarding calls a week. You know, making sure the users are happy, and also like I think after a week or like a couple. Maybe 7 to 10 days. I can't exactly remember how we build out an email sequence. We do give them a feedback form. So if they like the feedback, you know, they want more support, they want direct access to the founder, we create either like a Slack connect with them or like a Discord channel, Discord group rather, where they have like direct access to the founders, because that's when, you know, we try to call them like high expectation customers in a good way for sure. Just because we can see that they are actively using Beloga, they really like it. They really want to give feedback to help improve the product. And that has proven to be the truth. And like half the time we get bombarded with really positive messages or like, you know, even just them sharing like, oh, I use this prompt and it worked really well. I really like this prompt. This is something you might want to share with your community. Or even things like, okay, I thought about this idea. How can we implement? So it ended up becoming a very like friendly brainstorming sessions amidst all like some of the, you know, things that we could improve on. So it's been very like wholesome and exciting so far.
Nice, nice. I really like that. I just wondered one thing with Discord. You use Slack yourself for internal communication, right?
Yep.
How did it come up that you decided to not use Slack but Discord instead for the community part? Because I think it's kind of common ground to use Discord for a community. But I wondered, because I think, like, also, why not use Slack? Because everyone has Slack installed already. How did you decide to use Discord?
I think that's a good question. I think, firstly, for Slack, internal communication works really well. But I think when we were trying to set up, like, the community, we noticed from, like, you know, other people that we previously joined on Slack community, sometimes, like, if you're not paying for the whole community, the whole messages get, you know, wiped out after 90 days. This is just Slack's policy, right? So we realized that this is something we know we might not want to keep. And also, like, talking in, with our team, we realized that Discord is a bit better just because, you know, of how the features are being built just for, like, community building. We have things like, you know, there's an automatic welcome bot that we built inside. There's also, we could have different channels where people can easily share photos. It feels a bit more friendly and natural and less intimidating compared to, like, maybe Slack fully, where it's quite professional because, you know, we still want to cater to students alongside with, like, working professionals for Beluga itself. So we thought, like, Discord will be, like, the best of both worlds for now. But definitely we suffered a few analysis paralysis while deciding between Discord and Slack and had to weigh our options then.
Yeah, and I think Discord is really cool. I really one little mean question. I found on your website one link which is guiding me to Notion. So I wonder, are you still using Notion? And maybe Wilson, to you, what are, like, the coolest features which could be implemented to Beluga in the near future? Because I think Notion has, like, some cool tools which could be also interesting for you too. Do you, like, think about implementing some of the stuff Notion is doing right now?
Totally. We've been thinking about that for some time as well. So I think the link you might have stumbled on is our careers page.
The referral program affiliate right. Link page.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I need a link for the show notes. If someone is interested into trying Beluga, please click the link in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. For sure, spread it around. Yeah, it's definitely updated there. And the reason why we use Notion here as well, I think it's also because we're experimenting with that page. Frankly, here, like, we just launched the referral program, like, not too long ago, like a couple of days ago. So before, you know, actually hard, like, you know, coding it out into an actual web page and all that stuff, we want to experiment with it first to iteratively develop that part. But yeah, like, you know, to your question, in terms of, like, thinking about the features that, you know, Notion has and all that stuff, we did think about it. Some users are bringing that up as well. But I think at this point, we're starting off as more of a read it later type solution, where, you know, you get to capture things really, really easily into Beluga, minus, you know, all of that analysis paralysis where, you know, like, if you're starting a Notion page, you have to figure out, like, what kind of page you want to create and all that stuff. We want to make that experience really seamless, and then we want to build really good search on top of that to start off. But in the future, like, there's definitely possible expansion for, you know, note-taking capabilities and all that stuff. But we want to be really careful with that as well to make sure, you know, we're not introducing way too many pathways to get people the best value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think about, like I think Notion is, like, if we think about, like, knowledge base, it's, like, an interesting place where you can, like, store many, many texts, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that definitely, like, would be interesting outlook for Beluga, right? So that's something probably which, yeah, just makes logically sense in the long run for you to go. Yeah. Cool. Okay, I wonder, looking into your CVs, you have both, like, really interesting backgrounds, and I have a few questions to that. Maybe starting with you, Jerika, you studied medicine in the University of Manchester. Can you tell us a little bit the way of your life coming from medicine to building, like, a SaaS startup, which is launching a product?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think caveat here, like, to put it out there, like, I'm not the the kid that, like, you know, in medical school that you see, like, how any other medical students would be, you know, just not saying that it's a bad thing, but it's more of, like, they're really, really excited in their medical school since day one of being a doctor. But for me, it's always about finding, you know, that healthy balance. And I think that was when I found what I did enjoy at the side of medicine, which is actually talking to people, coaching to people. Because I think ever since, like, maybe I was 15, I started reading a lot of, like, self-improvement books, you know, like the big ones, like, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the 7 Highly Effective Habits of for People and stuff like that. Anyway, so basically based on that, I started developing a lot of, like, you know, how can I communicate with people? My question that I always like to ask myself is, how can I communicate with people that I, at that point in time, do not have access to? You know, for example, people or mentors, they're like 3 or 5 steps ahead for me. And I think through reading this, all these different, like, self-improvement books, I was able to find ways, you know, to add value to them. Because I think for them at this point in time, you know, finding mentorships was about, getting someone that is just a couple of steps ahead for you, not someone, not 10 steps, because that's a lot, right? So I think through that, I found a couple of mentors at my early days. And then, you know, during the whole COVID period, I decided to take the leap of faith and actually launch a mini bakery thing. And the whole bakery thing, honestly, was just for fun, because I think for me, my inner desire was to always test out, like, how can I run a business? So, like, you know, what's the safest way of, like, building it, you know, then just opening a little small bakery at home? Nothing much could go wrong except, like, you know, making bad food. But so through the whole bakery process, I told everybody that I wasn't, you know, earning this money for my own pocket money, but because I wanted to donate to charity. So this was all happened in Singapore during COVID, and I was able to donate over $5,000 to charity in a span of less than 3 months. And this is through me and, like, my parents, like, baking in our house kitchen. That's all we had. So, like, the house kitchen, you know, and then I learning how to take orders from people, communicating. So learning all the back end and the front end, and also baking alongside it. I remember one day, I will fondly remember this day where, like, it was the general election for Singapore that day. I can't remember the date, but we were waiting for the results, and we were baking like 20 or 30 brownies that night. So we're baking through the night to make sure to hit orders the next day. And I think that is something I carry through as well while building Beloga. So the whole baking thing, like, to wrap it up, it turned out to be a really huge success. And I realized that, oh, maybe I have a flair for building businesses. So I decided to take it one notch further. And I did a bit of productivity consulting at a site first to test it once again before trying to launch the startup, like, a Beloga with Wilson, because that's when I realized by helping people with productivity as well, I fell in love with this whole concept of, like, managing knowledge. And it really gets me excited to see how people can be more optimized with their life, especially knowing the fact that, like, everyone has a lot of potential. And that's something I strongly believe in, is that education, it's the way to, like, change your life. And education can come in different forms these days, you know, through being, like, watching YouTube, or, like, you know, through building the businesses, right? So taking all of that and combining with Wilson, that's why we decided to build Beloga. I know this question sounds really, really long, but this is how
but
Beloga alongside, you know, like, dabbling with this whole startup idea while alongside being on medical school.
I mean, it's a huge question. Like how has your life been? It's hard to answer in one sentence. Did you met also in Singapore? Because Wilson, I see also on your profile that you were studying computer engineering in Singapore.
Yes, we met in Singapore.
How did you both meet? Because I think that's always, like, really interesting how co-founders meet each other.
Wilson, you want to go?
I can answer that question. So we met through a mutual friend, you know, we've been sort of like in the same friend circle type thing. And yeah, we've been friends for quite a bit, like, in Singapore.
And how did it come? So both of you are now in Canada, Ontario. How did you move to Canada? Did you move because of Beloga or something else? Like, how did it come?
It's a good question. So maybe I'll answer from my side first. So I moved to Canada even before, you know, like starting Beloga. because I was doing a master's program here, which just ended like a couple of months ago. And yeah, like ever since then, I'm still based here. And Jerica, do you want to share your side as well?
Sure. So I think in April last year or something, Wilson one day decided to bring up this question. Like, his school had this I think foundation, like they call it the EPIC program, where basically they help founders who are interested in building a business, you know, start. Like, they have some mentoring sessions and everything. So we decided to take our chance and apply for it. It was just like a really silly idea at the time we had, where we wanted to build a decentralized blogging platform or a way for people to fact check stuff, that kind of thing. We applied with that idea, and then, you know, fortunately we did get in. So that kind of prompted me to, you know, take that leap of faith to move to Canada and to see where things are. And I would say it's been an interesting year. We were able to go for like different tech events as well after that. So after wrapping up the whole program, we went to TechCrunch last year. This year we were at New York Tech Week. We went to Collision, and that's where we had a booth as well. So we got to meet a lot of people, and it's been a whirlwind of like a one hell of a journey. Yeah.
I can imagine. I have a last question, which I find really interesting. Normally I have people from Europe or from San Francisco Bay Area in the podcast, because they are typical founder like hubs. I'm not sure, but I think I never had someone from Canada in the podcast. And I also think Singapore is probably like really interesting. So how would you think like Canada is for like building a startup, and how would you think like Singapore is for building a startup? Because with Singapore I also have like some history, and some parts of Singapore I really really liked, some things I really really dislike, mostly me being poor in an expensive country. How do you feel these both countries are for building a startup? Maybe Jerica, do you want to say Canada, and Wilson afterwards than Singapore?
I think Canada is a very interesting place, because firstly, mm-hmm. like, you know, the godfather of AI is in Toronto, Geoffrey Hinton. So for sure. Oh, speaking of that, we attended his talk at Collision as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one. And there's a lot of like tech startups booming actually in Canada, especially, you know, in like, I'm sure in both the East Coast and the West Coast, they will have a lot of like incubator programs. So it's been, and the network that you receive in Canada is really good. And, you know, like, because being in the North America region, the worst case, San Francisco is just a 5-hour plane ride away. It's not from like Singapore to San Francisco, but that flight takes 15 hours. So it's not too bad. If we do ever need to go for events or like, you know, meet people, that's something, it's a very doable trip. Or even for like New York, because, you know, from Toronto to New York, it's just an hour plane right away. So that being that in that close proximity in that North America region is really helpful. And just that, like, you know, Canada for us, we're fortunate enough that the Canadian exchange rate and the Singapore exchange rate is the same. So it's like 1:1. So it's quite okay to help to like optimize living expenses as well in Canada.
Nice. And Wilson, how about Singapore? I mean, you found it in Canada, but I guess still you have an idea of how it would be to start up in Singapore?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I would say that, you know, in Singapore, there's a lot of support network, you know, when it comes to starting up and all that. They're definitely booming over there, like building startups in the Southeast Asian regions and all. A ton of good support there as well. I think I've even been in one or two incubators back in Singapore. So it was really good. But yeah, like, I think, you know, mostly a personal preference here and all that. I've also worked in, you know, San Francisco for about a year for my previous company. And yeah, I really, really love the culture there. The reason why I picked Canada ultimately was also because, like, I wanted a place where, you know, it's a little bit not too close to the city, you know, that kind of vibes. And also, you know, I think it's a huge cost savings, to be honest. You know, San Francisco is expensive, New York City as well, but undeniably there is a booming, you know, startup culture and all there and all that over there. But Canada is a good place to live in, and yeah, like Jerica mentioned, you know, if you ever have to pop by for events and all that stuff, it's just, you know, a short flight away versus, like, you know, from Singapore all the way to North America.
Mm-hmm. And then it's just a weekend and not like living in San Francisco, etc. for like thousands of euros.
Yeah,
in the long run.
Yeah, it was pretty expensive to stay there.
I can imagine. Okay, thank you both so much. Congrats to this amazing product hunt launch. Well done. 707 upvotes and a cool product, and I wish you all the best for your future journey.
Thank you for having us today on the pod.
I hope you liked today's episode. I hope you learned something today. If you like the podcast, join, subscribe, give it 5 stars, and then hear you next time. Bye bye.